Very good! Ed Berry on the buzzer! What an
Making big shots.
Davis to reply. Yes, he hits a three! 3 3-pointers in quick succession at either end of the floor. The Rocks have it now.
Durham brings it cross mid-court. He's getting harassed by Evans. They still have fouls to give Cheshire. Here's Sloan to the basket. Out to Oymaz. Sloan in the corner for the win. Oh! Can you believe it? David Sloan wins it on the buzzer. And the Caledonian Gladiators go wild.
Hello and welcome to a Gladcast basketball podcast, the first one in a long, long time. But we are back with Gladiators. Are you ready? Mitchell is on the show. We are going to run through our kind of end of season awards. We're going to talk about briefly about the season as we've talked about it throughout as we've gone. But it's just kind of focusing on whatever else. In total this season, 48 men's games, 23-13 in the league, a third place finish the table. I think the highest since 2017, yeah. I believe. The women, they've played 26 games so far. They've got one more league game to go, but they are guaranteed to finish second. They are 16-3 in the season. In Europe, the men finished, obviously, unfortunately, didn't do that well against Freiburg. And the BCL qualies, whoever remembers when that was, way back in, it was September time. We then went 3-3 in Europe Cup, which is an unbelievable return from where people didn't think they'd win a game. Our women's team, they in Euro Cup, obviously, which the London Lions went on and won. Our women got through the group stages. They then, unfortunately, were defeated by a Hungarian side in the first playoff round. We have had a total, Mitch, I don't know if you'll know this, you should know this, 16 women players have laced up during the WBBL season, and 16 men as well have dressed up and played. We've had record crowds for the women who had a game over 900. We've had many a sellout on the men's side as well, and all that on the back of the Gladiators having their own facility. So, Mitchell, welcome back on the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And that's kind of a quick summarization, if that's even the right word. Summary. Could have just used the word summary, to be honest, of how the Gladiators' on-court season's been.
I think this season has been an education for everyone, both on and off the court. Obviously, first year in the new venue, figuring out how things are working, but you see the right steps are being taken to really try and meet the goals and aspirations a club have to be competitive in Europe and be competitive in the domestic scene. The men have improved from last year. They were competitive in Europe and did better than anyone could have expected in the Europe Cup. The women have done phenomenally in their first year in Europe. They've done incredibly well in the women in the domestic league as well, and have basically solidified second place, which is phenomenal. And you've got to really think that both teams have a chance to at least make a push in the playoffs and hopefully have both teams get into London for the final.
And that's what makes the next, I suppose, month, as the 19th of May is the finals at the O2 in London. I will be there regardless because I always enjoy my wee trip to London. But from teams, the teams have gone from Belgium to deepest, darkest Transylvania to Poland to to Bilbao, and not forgetting Bristol and Plymouth. Both teams have been well travelled this year, and I suppose the women were in Hungary as well, so it's been an absolutely, passports have been well and truly out. The air miles for the club are through the roof. The bus tyres are worn out, but it's been a fun season. We've seen ups and downs for both squads. We've seen, obviously, for the guys, the change in personnel around about the turn of the year in terms of Mihailo dropping out and Trent dropping out and bringing in Mike Bothwell and Kwadi Green. And we saw for the women a bit more of an introduction from the high-performance players and also Geneva and Dai leaving the squad. So you see the kind of direction in which the teams are going in. Mitchell, we are going to... Before we do that, actually, I was going to say something else. But How did you find, I think we've touched on it before, actually, we have. How did you find at that start of the season, getting everything ready, that whole European journey we had on Below the Rim 2 weeks ago, Gareth, talking about obviously getting ready to play these teams and the difference in styles. But from you, kind of that off-court kind of point of view, how did you find just being in these other kind of, like, let's be honest, Anvil, basketball mad country, Bilbao, basketball mad, and yeah, Romania as well, Cebu were a massively well-supported team.
First and foremost, I'm very grateful I got the opportunity to actually do it. To be able to save travel in Europe and for European competitions for any sport is a massive, like, badge of honour to have. And to be fair to the experiences we had in Europe, they were very different to what you would typically expect. Because obviously when you think of European competition, your first thought goes to football. You're going to big, massive cities. You're going to big, massive venues and playing in front of enormous crowds. And for us, it wasn't actually like that for every game. For Bilbao, it was like that. They had a massive venue, similar to that in terms of max capacity of, say, the Copper Box, or even bigger than that. But, for example, Anvil and Sibiu, their venue capacities were probably on par, maybe slightly bigger than the amphitheatre at the PlaySport. They were not massive venues, but the passion and the atmosphere from the fans was unbelievable. And going to these places and seeing these fans and hearing the roar for every basket, every minute of the game, I think Gareth touched on it in another podcast, but our first game in Romania, first game in the Europe Cup, where directly from the opposite side of the centre of court is a group of diehard Sibiu fans who are just chanting, playing drums and singing the entire match from start to finish. And it was just, it's incredible to see that passion for the game. And being a part of that behind the scenes was incredible. Not just because you get to go and travel to meet these places, but you build connections with different people as well. And you get to really see how other teams operate and how their different teams are structured and how that works. And for us, it was a learning experience, and it's one that things went well, things didn't go well, but hopefully with the intention of going back into Europe next year, the Gladiators will be better next year and be more competitive next year as well.
And it's amazing, everyone's kind of touched on it within the club a lot of times, is learning experiences. Europe is a learning experience, going to these countries, how you prepare and get players ready. From simple things like transport to food and to whatever else, because you go to these countries, you don't know what everything's going to be. But it's one of those ones you went from. How did you get to Bilbao again? Did you go via Frankfurt or something?
So Bilbao, it was via Frankfurt, yeah.
Frankfurt to Bilbao to London to Bristol to Plymouth, all in a weekend.
Yeah, that was a lovely 6-day trip away from home. It was. As much as it was a great experience, I am relishing the chance to not have to do that for a while.
No, and it's always tough. But when you look at that one, the Cebu game to me always sticks out as like Mihailo Jovicic's kind of, not claim to fame, but what he'll probably be remembered for in a Gladiators jersey. Trent Buttrick to me will be remembered for his performance away to London when we beat the Lions. You then look at players like who have come in and replaced him, what Kwadi Green's done in the league since he's come in. He's had really one quiet game since his arrival. I think he's now through 12 games. And it's a pretty impressive change in fortunes in terms of tempo of how the team play as we kind of head towards the playoffs. I think we now have the highest scoring offense in the league or something. I'm sure I've seen that. That may have been before we played Sheffield though, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's been a massively intriguing season. It's had its massive up and downs.
Yeah, I think that now the men's team in particular are really hitting their stride. Like you saw at the start of the season, specifically when they were doing Europe and domestic, they were struggling to find their footing and find where everyone fit. And as the season's got on and we've moved further through the year, the ball started rolling, pieces started connecting, we're gelling better, and we're coming to the business end of the season, which is our next chance to pick up any silverware. And the team are probably in the best position they can be for this.
And then we don't fully know. A lot has been made about injuries this season in the league. across many different teams, and every team has kind of, with, you know, even Cheshire have as well. They've had players sit Aaron Rice out for a while, Mason Jacks out for a while. But every team's kind of struggled with injuries. And the kind of the big question mark has always been around when Farrell will return and if Ian DeBos will. And it's two kind of massive players that you've seen on the bench since they went out who are still a major part of the kind of team camaraderie, the team spirit, the drive to, like, these guys have still travelled to away games all to make sure they support their team and stay ready to go when they're back fit.
Definitely. And I think the team we have, like, it's having Farrell and Ian, Ian not playing. Some players in that situation would just disengage entirely, would focus on the rehab, or some would be sent home in other years. This year, they've been at every practice session. They've been engaging with the team. They've been providing guidance and advice and giving their thoughts across every day when they come into work. And that is credit to them as athletes and as professionals, that they're willing to do that and they're willing to give up their time, even when they're recovering, to be a part of that team and really support them to make sure the team's in the best position possible. The timeline for when they return is still TBC. We're hopeful we'll get some playoff appearances, but at this stage of the season, if someone's coming back in the squad right during the playoffs, you're not exactly going to put Ian DeBos back as your starting guard. It's just not going to happen. But that doesn't mean he can't be a factor on the bench and still be that supporting guidance, even if he isn't playing, to really help someone like a younger player, like a Mike Boswell or a Clifton Moore, to really take that step in the right direction, to be that factor for the playoff push.
And we just have to see how other guys have stepped up. We just have to see the impact that Clifton's made. Basically, since the start of the Cup campaign, really, since the turn of the year, he's had... The Bristol away game was kind of his one kind of look like back. You know, rookies centres always have these games where you look and go, you know what, that's a rookie game against a Brad Green where things haven't just gone his way. But he still finished the game with two flush dunks that kind of sealed the victory. And you've got to think Clifton's ceiling in terms of where he's going to be is incredibly high, and it's going to be an exciting end of the season for him and to see what's next for on his basketball journey. Hopefully it's in the Blue of Caledonia, though.
We can only hope he's back for the Gladiators. But as you said, his potential is through the roof. I mean, you're talking a guy who's just shy of 7 feet tall, has an absolute athlete, has really good defensive capabilities, and can dunk the ball like anybody's business. And he's got a three-point shot on him as well. Like, this is a guy who, you saw him when he's playing against other teams in Europe, that he's doing well against them. His biggest challenge has been that he's not as big a body as some of these other European centres.
Yeah, but, like, Bobel had three guys almost 7 foot.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing stopping Clifton from being that strong body inside. But a lot of that comes from just the time and commitment to doing that. So that'll be one decision he has to make in the off-season when the season's finished, of what kind of centre does he want to be. He's now been exposed to a more athletic stretch centre, say like a Skylar White, for example, who's more of a shooting three-point centre. Or do you go somewhat more like along the lines of a Saquon Jameson or an Ali Hodzic, who are playing back to the basket, right under the basket? He's got the versatility to do both.
Absolutely. So let's look at the league as a whole just really quickly. Who, if, and unfortunately, neither of us get a vote in any sorts of league-wide poll from the Journal Awards to the actual League Awards as well. But who's been your kind of, when you look at what you've watched around the league, who's been the kind of standout player? Who'd be your MVP or whatever?
I've been a big fan of Gabe Olusheny. I've really enjoyed watching him play, and his dominance when he's on the court has been absolutely phenomenal. He's kind of been my guy all year that when I've watched him play, I've not been able to take my eyes off of him. It's just, he gets it done on either side of the ball. Outside of Gabe,
he goes, and also Gabe goes about it where you don't realise all of a sudden he's like 15 and 15, and you're like, he just does it every quarter. He's on the floor for probably 18-19 minutes as well, and you're like, yeah, how's he done this?
Yeah, he's quiet, but he's super effective what he does. And I think that for London, that's, he's been that anchor of when he's on the court and he's on the floor, like, it means that he has his time on the court, he does what he needs to do. He can step off and, I guess, have someone like a Connor Morgan or a Sharma come on, play that five spot, cover him for him a little bit, and they do things that he doesn't do.
Yeah.
But he's just as effective. Outside of London, though, I think for me, biggest difference maker player has probably been LaQuincy Rodeaux from Cheshire. He's just been a constant pest on the defensive end. He's really stepped up offensively, and he's got a little bit of everything. He's got a little bit of that hunger in him where he's just a competitor. He wants to win every game. He wants to embarrass the opposition every single game. And I think come playoff time, he's going to be a problem for any team he goes up against.
Yeah, and you just see the kind of, he's able to get under the kind of skin of opponents' players. You're seeing a few reactions to that in more recent weeks. And it's always just interesting to see how that kind of plays out during the playoffs with the matches ahead, especially over a three-game series. And let's talk about three-game series. How, like, I'm very much looking forward to this. Aggregate scoring, for us basketball geeks, we can see it, we can get it, we can work with it. But in terms of promoting a game, like, oh yeah, we won, but we needed to win by 8, but we only won by 6. You're like, people are celebrating a win, but actually they've lost. Scrap that. Win, you're through.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the best way to do it. It's even funny, I actually watched the FIBA Europe Cup final, which was on today.
That was on today, yes.
And the German team in the final had to lose by more than 10 to basically, they had to lose by more than 10 to lose because they were playing aggregate score. They lost by 10. But they still won the Europe Cup. To me, that's just unbelievable, because if that was any other league, some leagues do aggregate score, but for me, that doesn't mean you win. For me, it's every game, just like in basketball, as it standardly is.
They were up by 11. Oh yeah, they were up by 11 points, didn't they? Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing of, like, in basketball, in any individual game, there is no tie in a standard game of basketball. Someone has to win every game. Why do we change that rule for the playoffs? Yeah. Every game matters. Make it best of 3, and then the best team will go through.
And it also
means that if one player goes off for one game, that it's not going to have that much a massive factor for the next. It makes it much more about the team dynamic and the coaching dynamics of, like, you could have great players, but if your coaches can't adapt game by game basis, you can get away with winning by 31 game, and then you're fine. You can't do it in a three-game series.
So obviously, you look around the leagues and the matchups. Sometimes some of these teams have played 4, some have played 5 because of the trophy competition. And it's going to be interesting to see what coaches throughout the league have either kept or they've got, or bringing guys back from injury, and or the late changes to rosters that you've seen the impact, obviously, of Quade for us. And teams are taking note of that. And you look at then what the coaches can do. The best of 3, I think, allows for just that kind of, okay, let's do X, Y, Z, rather than, oh no, we're going to have to just go with this because that's what we've done and that's what we're known for.
Definitely. I think for the Gladiators perspective on it, it gives Gareth and Coach Dan a real chance to flex their coaching muscles a little bit and show how they adapt to different situations. And I think this will be a good test of how well are our coaching staff able to use the players we have to adapt to the different teams we're playing. Well, no doubt we're touching on who we're facing in the playoffs anyway, but, like, Newcastle are going to be a team that guard rotation alone is a challenge, but how we play them may change game by game based on who's getting hot, who's not playing as well, or who do we want to try and take advantage of in this game.
And we saw that. We see Newcastle like to drive inside. They like to get to the free throw line. They do a lot of work there. They've got brilliant scorers in Ricky McGill, and we all know what Jordan Johnson can do, but they've also got that wisely old man in the centre who's just that veteran who's just been there, done that, got every single final winning t-shirt and just knows how to win games in Darius DeVoe at this time of year. And he's obviously the kind of cornerstone of what they do inside in defence, what they do. They've got 4 quick guys and he kind of trailers up the court. And his mid-range jump shot's as good as it's ever been.
Yeah. Credit to him. He's still absolutely amazing for the age he is. And what he's been able to do to keep himself competitive at that age is incredible.
Absolutely incredible.
I think of myself. I've got arthritic knees and I'm 29. I could do that for 19 seasons. I'd fall apart. But the fact he's been able to do it consistently and be that leader for Newcastle is a massive credit to him. And he's a reason why Newcastle keeps staying competitive.
Yeah, so let's flip it over to the women in the playoffs. They've got Durham. Durham obviously have Danica Wallace-Griffiths who's coming. Griffith Wallace, sorry. I said her name backwards. I better not do that wrong in comms. Who went off for such a brilliant kind of 50-point game the other week, which is incredible, but also something you're like, I'm glad that wasn't our team, because with the women's playoffs, it's slightly different. It's win or bust.
Yeah. So it means that having that second place finish is massive for us. And it means that when it comes through to the playoff structure, that it gives us a little advantage for any given game. The women have thankfully been pretty damn dominant at home. So you would hope that the women should, until at least the final, should have a pretty good running to get there. But we've already lost a couple of games this year already. They've got a big game in London coming up. That is probably going to be setting the litmus test of where this team is heading into the playoffs. If they're competitive against London, if they beat London, which, let's be honest, with the team we have to hope there's a shot of that at least.
And especially there's no point not mentioning either, especially with London missing some of their top players that brought them to success. Megan Gustafson, Temi Fang-Benley, and Carly Samuelson. That's three massive kind of token poles of that London Lions women team success gone. They've still, however, got Holly Winterburn. They've still got Abby Myers at the moment. They've still got Kat Stastnina. They've still got Ivana Katanic. They've still got Shanice Beckford-Norton, that kind of stuff. And you just go, that's still a absolutely stacked out team.
And that's the thing with London, for both the men's and the women's team, is that there's always more names coming off that bench that are ready to go. And they're going to be a force to deal with in the playoffs, even without Temi, without Carly. Like, they're still going to be a problem for any team in the league.
Absolutely. And the hope is, obviously, you look at some of this, there was some chat online being like, oh, how would you look to schedule your playoff games? You always want to play the first one at home, don't you? To go home first, get off to a good stay, and you try and win it on the road.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a standard way of doing it. That's what I would do. I think playing away first puts pressure on you. It means that if you do that, and say, for example, in our situation, we go to Newcastle and we play them away for the first leg, and say we lose by 5 in Newcastle, we still have to win 2 games at home back to back. And that's a lot of pressure, especially in front of a roaring home crowd. You want your crowd that are cheering for you to take the leads, to have the advantage, not when the chips are down and you're about to, on the verge of losing and being knocked to the playoffs. And I think for any team, really, should be wanting that first leg at home. And the Gladiators are no exception to that.
Absolutely. So let's we'll move on from there. But good luck to both teams. The women have got, obviously, London away in league business first. Part of London's doubleheader this weekend before they start their kind of playoff games on the Sunday the 5th, which would potentially be the game 3 night for the men. So the men start their campaign this Friday, and then the second leg is on Friday the 3rd of May. And it's crazy to think we're in May already. But let's move on to our kind of end of season awards. We did this last season. I know Rona's voted already. She unfortunately couldn't join us tonight. So Rona's votes are in. I came up with the idea, you know what, let's go for make it a bit more fan-based this year. And I only put it out a matter of hours ago. And thank you to everyone who's filled it in and come back and put a vote in. It's actually been a lot more votes than I thought there would be, and a lot more interesting voting than I thought it would be. So it's brilliant to see. So thank you so much for getting involved and engaging in it. And such a short period of time, the link will stop working probably actually after Mitchell votes, because Mitchell's not voted yet. We've deliberately done this, so Mitchell's going to almost do say who he would think as we record, and then we'll go and say who wins. So, Mitchell, we've talked about both teams for a while, and we started talking about this offline, off recording. We went, no, let's record this. So who is, if there was 5 questions asked at the start, First question is, your men's MVP.
The men's MVP for me comes out of two players that have really stepped up this year. One is a household name in the BBL already, has been a consistent force through all year. For me, I think for the player I'm going to pick is probably going to be Clifton Moore, though. For me, it is about looking at the issues we faced this year, specifically with Farrell going down for as long as he has been down. Clifton needed to step up big, and he has done that with as much force as he can bring. He might have struggled a little bit in European campaign. The style of play was still adapting to that. It was still early in the year in his first year as a pro. But he has got better and better as the year has gone on. He's been trusted with more and more responsibility as the year has gone on. And there's a reason why the league have even given him a name. The Loch Ness Monster is a thing now. We have to accept that. And he is worthy of that title on the offensive and the defensive end. He is a problem, and he's my pick for MVP.
Awesome. So have you locked that one in?
That one's locked in.
Nice. Awesome. So we'll go through top three once Mitchell's done his votes. So let's move on. Most valuable player for the women.
Okay. For the women, I kind of have to go Hannah Robb. It's probably my pick. She's been consistent all year. She's someone that can always be trusted to do what needs to be done for the team to win. She's had multiple 20-point games all year. She leads the league, leads the team in minutes. She's one of the most efficient players, one of the most consistent. It has to be Hannah Robb for me.
Brilliant. And then on to the next one. In terms, have you locked? Make sure you lock that vote in.
I was locked in.
Oh, I love that. And I'm also loving the fact I'm saying locked in. Like, well, as if I'm on some like BBC Two lunchtime game show.
Final answer.
Anyway, most improved player for the men. I put four names down. Clifton Moore Jr. is there. Fraser Malcolm, Oscar Baldwin, and Kyle Jimenez. This could be a one that we've seen kind of grow and develop throughout the season. From being maybe a low-minute player to be playing a massive part, or someone you've just seen that development as the season's come on.
Yeah. I think for me, the most improved player is Fraser Malcolm. First year as a full-time professional athlete, the steps he's taken to develop as a player and the effort he's made has been incredible to watch. He is becoming a quintessential role player in this league. He's doing everything he needs to do, and when he comes off the bench, you know what you're getting every night, and he's consistent with that. Even in more recent weeks when Onwas was out with an injury, but he stepped up. He did absolutely phenomenal. He did everything he needed to do to help the team win games. So for me, Fraser is my most improved player.
And that's locked in?
That's locked in.
Yes. Now on to the women. Most improved player. We could have put in a number of the kind of high-performance girls that got added to the roster throughout the season, but I decided to go with just Alex McIntosh, Hannah Robb, and Yevhenia Putra.
It's tough. This is probably the hardest one that you've given me for this, because I think the arguments for Hannah Robb is really strong. She's developed a lot from last year. She's gotten better as the season's gone on as well. I'm struggling to know who to pick for this one, to be honest with you. Alex is just incredibly a high performance player. She's becoming really strong, and she's been consistently impressive when she's been on the court.
And you can see the maturity in her game now. Like, she maybe came in, looked at kind of young, shy. There's a bit of confidence when she comes on the floor. She doesn't mind going up against vastly more experienced players, and then able to kind of calmly hit some big shots.
Yeah, there's no fear when she steps on that floor. So, let's go with Alex. Alex is a good pick. As most improved.
Lock that in.
Lock them.
Love that. So final one I just put in, because I was really curious to see what, as Caledonia Gladiators public and as, what as a fan base stands out for the fans this season. And it's amazing seeing some of the responses. And obviously I didn't put down any options because I wanted there to be an interesting group of words coming in and sentences. So I'll probably share this kind of almost as like a big word bubble and different kind of things when I come to kind of publish this, because there's been so many kind of big moments. But Mitchell, what would your moment be of the season?
There's a few to pick from on my end. So the most obvious ones that pop to my mind are from the European campaign. So the travel to Sibiu and the victory there to get our first ever win in Europe was a massive, massive achievement. And to actually see that come to fruition was phenomenal. Another one from the European campaign is the winning at Anvil at home. Having that massive crowd in there, having their fans roaring throughout the game, and us beating the Europe Cup champions and at home was something incredible to watch. The third one, which I'm not going to be picking just as a spoiler, was probably the London victory in London. But that's more so due to the comedy of errors and the adversity we faced on the build-up to the game rather than the actual game itself. So I think purely because of the moment and the basically the cementing of history for the Gladiators, I'm going to go with the first game, the Sibiu match. The win in Sibiu was... I still remember that game. I still remember the atmosphere there. I still remember as the final shots going up, Patrick's run up the court, bank 3-point shot to end the game. It was just a perfect icing on the cake for that match. So I'm going to lock that in now.
I love that. And then I don't know if you'll remember, but that was also the women's first game that day. So the men played Cebu away and the women were at home to Benfica.
They were, weren't they?
It was the exact same day. And that's... I'm wiggling a receipt at you, Mitchell. Sorry. I'm pointing paper at you. But that was... And you saw that you turned up at the Play Sport that night for what was really the women's first game as such of the season, which is crazy to think. But everyone was buzzing off the men's result. Mm-hmm. And it was as if that whole kind of wave of positivity for the building then came into like the women just absolutely putting Benfica to the sword. So I've not really said what I've voted for throughout, but for me that whole day was just pretty awesome. Like from watching the team away from home with, remember there was no, you wouldn't have known, well you probably would have watched this game back, no commentary, just standard YouTube Europe Cup kind of coverage, to then being at the game at night watching the women absolutely destroy Benfica was pretty cool.
It was an incredible night for everyone, for the entire Gladiators family. That was just a real chance, good chance for us to really cement our place in Europe. Of we're here to compete, we're here to fight, and that was the start of it. That was the start of the campaign for both of us, and it led to a very impressive year for both of us in terms of in European competition. And you have to hope that we'll be back next year. And we'll be fighting again next year to be a part of that again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into the results of this. So again, thank you to everyone who's voted. Thank you to Mitchell. I'll do a top three for the MVPs. I'll read out the winner of the MIP, and then I'll just read out a selection of comments from the kind of moment of the season. So for the men, in third place, and I need to try and find out how on Riverside, which I'm recording off tonight, how I can add in right now like a wee drum roll. That'd be pretty cool. A wee sound effect. There'll be something somewhere. I'll work it out. You know what? Let's see if I can quickly find it. Wait. Drum roll. Oh. Right, you got it? You hear it?
Yeah, I got it.
Yes, okay. We're going to play it again. So, drum roll. Third place is... Let's see if I can get it again. I broke it. No, wait. The matter of... I'm not editing this out. This is staying in. So...
Oh, God. Okay.
There we go. So, third place is... On 17.5% of the votes is Patrick Whelan.
What? Good. You deserve some recognition. Patrick's had a good year.
He is, in my opinion, one of the most under... Which is crazy to think that Pat Whelan can still be underrated... underrated players this season because of the addition of Kwade Green, who is, drumroll please, Kwade Green in second place on 22.5%. So the addition of Kwade late in the season, you wonder what he could have done on our roster the full season. And who knows, it could have gone against us as well because teams are able to work out. It's one of these kind of massive question marks that will be interesting to see if Quaddy returns to the roster next season, what can happen. However, I'm getting this wrong. Yes, there we go. Drum roll. The Gladcast Most Valuable Player of the Year is, with 30% of the votes, Clifton Moore Jr.
Well deserved. Well deserved.
So yeah, Clifton's had a phenomenal season. He's come in after a kind of stellar NCAA career. He's the 6'11 Block Ness monster as Gladcast's men's most valuable player. So well done to Clifton. Well done to Clifton indeed. Let's move. On you go, sorry?
Was there anyone else that got recognition in terms of the...
Oh, there was recognition for Prince Onwaz, Fraser Malcolm, Lucas Paliza, and even Ian DeBose. Plus more. But that was like the ones that were quite higher up. Mm-hmm. For the women, we'll do top three again. In third place. I'm loving this. I'm so proud of myself. On 10% of the votes is Kirsty Brown.
Okay. Okay, that's Kirsty, fair.
Mainstay of the rotation, got her all-star call-up and still massive part of what GB basketball is doing. It's been great seeing the Scottish-born, people kind of forget that because she obviously speaks with her kind of Californian accent, the Scottish-born centre can do. But in second place, on 28% of your vote, I'm getting a bit bored of the drum roll now, so 28% of the votes, is Lakin James.
Okay, good.
And we saw the impact Lakin had when she was in Scotland before, but she continues to do that and absolutely is all in every game. Nuisance on both sides of the floor, can create for herself, absolutely incredible defender, and very much deserves second place in the Gladcast Most Valuable Player for Women.
That's good.
So the winner is, with over 41% of the vote, is Hannah Ropp.
That's fair.
So well done, Hannah. Hannah Ropp is the 2024 Gladcast Most Valuable Player Women's Award winner. The GB player has been just incredible to watch all season and topped off by her incredible performance last weekend against the Leicester Riders. So well done to our winner. So our men's MVP is Clifton Virginia and our women is Hannah Ropp. Woo!
So fun fact for Hannah Ropp, just looking at her stats, she has played 60 minutes more than anyone else on the Gladiators roster. Just shy of 60 minutes more.
That's incredible. That is incredible. So let's go on. Let's do our most improved player. All the votes are in, casted, verified and checked. So we'll do the men's first, since I'm just going down my list. Mm-hmm. There was four players I picked. It was Kyle Jimenez, Oscar Baldwin, Fraser Malcolm, and I mentioned, ever mentioned from the last award, Clifton Moore Jr. But our winner, winning with over 9.2% of the vote.
Damn.
I know. And a landslide victory is Fraser Malcolm.
Wow. That's a lot of praise for Fraser. Well played. Well deserved.
And you know what? Well deserved. He's gone from not seeing the court in BCL qualifiers against Freiburg to being in the starting five. The confidence and the matchup difficulty causes most teams is absolutely incredible to watch. So Fraser very much deserves this and really excited to see what we've touched on before, a pro for the full season, not having to teach forward rolls or badminton overhead clears to kids during the day, has done for his game. So Fraser, well done, sir, and very much deserved. And to see what happens next.
Congratulations. The only way is up.
Absolutely. So, now on to our fourth award. The most improved player for the women's team. There were three names on the list. Evgenia Putra, the young Ukrainian international, who made her Ukrainian full international debut in the FIBA window this season. Alex McIntosh, one of the high performance players, who's involved with the GB Junior setup. And obviously involved with the Gladiators high performance. And earning minutes throughout the season since she became actually a main part of the rotation. And finally, Hannah Ropp. I put Hannah Ropp in there because we have seen a massive growth in her to become almost like a leader on the court this season as well. So the winner is, for the most improved player for the women's side, is... loving the drum roll now, back to Full House, is, with 57% of the votes, is Hannah Robb. So Hannah Robb is a double winner this year. So well done, Hannah. She's been very much appreciated by the Gladiators fan base this season. Has been absolutely incredible. And you know what makes her whole basketball journey even better? She started her basketball in Scotland. She grew up in Scotland. She played for Pride. She's gone down south. She's come back home. She's not done the whole USA trip. She's made up absolutely amazing career for herself playing basketball by being in the UK. So it's a massive well done to her. She had an incredible season, doing it now in Europe, doing it for Great Britain, and was probably in my top two favourite pre-season podcasts I did. So,
well, that's all the more reason to give her the award then.
I voted 50 times for her. No, but no, absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, but I thought now let's go a few people's kind of moment of the seasons. And there's a lot of common themes were popping up. And it shows what we were thinking and talking about, because I didn't really speak to Mitchell about these before we started recording. So it's always just really interesting to hear, people's views and what they kind of think. But people mentioned beating Anvil, the win against Anvil, seeing both teams in action, the atmosphere at some of the games, including Anvil, but also there was mentions for the Cheshire Phoenix game in which the drums were moved behind them, as that's what they did to us. And Coach Ben Thomas of the Cheshire Phoenix ended up doing his team talk on the court. The recent overtime win against Cheshire, which Lucas Paliza's buzzer beating three took us to there. Someone said a very nice comment here about the very first Women's Euro Cup game at home in the amphitheatre. Just everything about it was iconic for not just the team, but women's basketball in Scotland. Mm-hmm. People don't just mentioning moment of the season is signing Quade Green. Being in play sport and seeing what it can do for that. Kyle and Alex making their debuts for the team. And there was Mitchell's comment there about this win in Cebu as well. And you know what? There was one here saying, and the person listening is just saying it's not over yet. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's not. Both teams have massive games coming up and they run into the end of the season. We may both be there. I'm going to go to London regardless. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You never know. Both teams have a massive opportunity as the season heads towards its conclusion. Yeah. So, Mitchell, that'll do for us tonight. Well done to our awards winners. Thank you for joining me on this tonight. Thank you for joining throughout the season as well. Didn't do this as much as I would like. Life gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah.
And yes. So thank you for tonight, Mitchell. And yeah, well, this was good fun.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me. And here's looking forward to a very fun Gladiators postseason.
Absolutely. And who knows where the rosters will be, who we'll see coming and out. No doubt we'll be back. I'll definitely be back talking my usual dribble. You'll hear me on the women's game against Durham. I hope so, because I enjoyed calling that game last Sunday. One of the best games of the season last week. Well done to the girls getting an absolutely amazing win against the Leicester Riders at home, getting revenge for the defeat previously. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. Hope you enjoy the show, and we'll catch you next time on GladCast.